So I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 14, text number 10. Ukramantam sitim vapi bunjanam vaganan vitam imura nana pashanti pashanti gana chakshushaha. Shri Prabhupada's translation purport. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. The one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. For his purport, the word jnana chakshusha is very significant. Without knowledge, one cannot understand how a living entity leaves his present body, nor what form of body he is going to take in the next life, nor even why he is living in a particular type of body. This requires a great amount of knowledge understood from Bhagavad Gita and similar literatures heard from a bona fide spiritual master. One who is trained to perceive all these things is fortunate. Every living entity is quitting his body under certain circumstances. He is living under certain circumstances, and he is enjoying under certain circumstances under the spell of material nature. As a result, he is suffering different kinds of happiness and distress under the illusion of sense enjoyment. Persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying different ways. A person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general, for their conditional life is very much troublesome. They should come out of it and be Krishna conscious and liberate themselves to transfer to the spiritual world. So the text again. Ukramantam sitim vapi bunjanam vaganan vitam Vimura nana pashanti, pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But those whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Vudhaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasatun Deve, Gauravani Vacharane, Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paschakya De Sitarane. Here Lord Krishna is explaining about how when a living entity misidentifies themselves with the body, then they are considered to be foolish. Of course, in modern society, people are considering this identification with the body completely natural. And that one who doesn't identify themselves with the body, they consider to be something unnatural. But if you go to a psychiatrist and you tell them that you don't identify yourself with your body, then they'll lock you up for some time. They'll give you so many drugs, so by the time of their treatment, you will identify yourself with your body. But from the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has explained that we are not the body. He said, Deno sminita dehe kamaram yovanam jara tata dahantra praptir diryastatra namuyati. Well, Krishna is saying that our body is changing. So So that shouldn't be a great revelation to most of us. That everyone has experienced so many different changes of body. Our body has gone from boyhood to youth to old age, and now we have this body. But as all of us know, that this will not be the last change of body. But our body will continue to change until the last change, which is called when we leave the body. But when we leave the body, that's not the last of us. Because as we're in this body now, and in spite of all the different changes of body, all the different types of circumstances that we've been under, still we are exactly the same person. With the same person with different experiences, because presently our experience in conditioned life depends upon the state of the body or the subtle mind. Therefore, the Prabhupada says we're enjoying, or actually suffering, different kinds of happiness and distress. In other words, the happiness in the material world is actually a different form of distress, but due to illusion, we're thinking it's happiness. It's all distress. It's all distress because the very body itself is always in distress. Just like no matter how much money we have in the bank, still, if it gets too hot, we feel it. It is not that if there's a millionaire in Melbourne, he's exempt from the hot weather. That the weather says he's too rich to suffer. Or if it gets very cold, everyone suffers equally. If there are mosquitoes, then the mosquitoes bite the billionaire along with the pauper. Probably the mosquitoes bite him more because his blood is richer. So in the material world, although in some respects someone may be relatively in a more comfortable position than someone else, everyone to some degree is suffering. That even, according to the Vedic literature, Lord Brahma, who is the father of the entire universe, he's also suffering. Looking around with his forehead, seeing the universe, he's seeing so many problems. When we look around with one head, we see problems, but he sees four times many problems. Therefore, the living entity who wants to be happy in the material world is trying to figure out, trying to gain knowledge, what to do to become happy. That knowledge does not simply mean technology. As we can see, although in present society knowledge has been equated with technology, technology has not necessarily made people more peaceful and happy. Knowing that due to technology, our leaders can press a button and annihilate most of the world, including Melbourne, does not make us more joyful and happy. Thinking, oh, how wonderful is technology. With a little touch of a button, someone gets up on the wrong side of the bed and everyone's annihilated. How technologically wonderful. Of course, we can say other types of technology have helped. We have cars now and airplanes, but I don't think that having a car has made people actually happier, or having an airplane has made people happier. Although it may be true that you can fly from one city to another, but in each city that we fly to, they have the same problems. Here in Melbourne, there may be advertisement, fly to Los Angeles, and in Los Angeles there's so many advertisements, fly to Melbourne. So everyone is looking for knowledge of how to actually become happy. So happiness depends not on our technological development, but upon our spiritual or conscious development. So that conscious development means to become aware of the fact that we're spiritual souls, we're the person who's within the body and are witnessing the different states of body. Therefore, the higher states of consciousness, namely the mode of goodness, is the way that we can come to realize that real happiness is to become free from the bodily concept of life, not to become absorbed in it. So Krishna says here that people are foolish because they don't understand these things. They may understand so many things about how the material world works, but if they don't understand who they are, then they're considered to be foolish. You may have a very prominent scientist, but if he thinks himself to be Napoleon, he may be able to do so many technical things quite amazingly, but because he misidentifies himself with someone he's not, still he'd be considered to be more or less crazy. Similarly, although we're within this body, and we may have a very wonderful body comparatively to others, if we don't know who we are within the body, this is a mistake at least. So Bhagavad Gita is a science to finding out who we actually are. So that's called knowledge. And if we work according to that knowledge, then we can find the actual source of happiness, beginning with becoming liberated from the bodily and mental conception of life, to finding what the real source of happiness is. Namely, here it explains that becoming conscious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is happiness himself, is actual knowledge. The purpose of knowledge, to develop further knowledge, comes about when we become aware of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then we can discover our actual identity. As we're conscious living entities, so there's a supreme conscious living entity. We're moving this body, or seemingly have something to do with moving the body, and there's a supreme conscious living entity who's moving all the different planets in their orbit, who's moving all the different living entities within this world, giving them the intelligence for whatever they're doing. That the scientists, Prabhupada said, they may be able to create one Sputnik, but they can they create a planet like this Earth planet? They can create one car, but even on the best roads, everything is quite bumpy and dangerous. But here we're riding around in this car, the Earth, and we're not feeling any bumps. So who's made a better car? If we don't recognize that we're living in a universe which is being governed by a superior personality, and the reason why he's giving us this universe must have a purpose. People don't usually give universes without some purpose. But because people don't understand what the purpose is, and because they don't understand who they are, they actually don't know what to do to actually better or further their existence. Instead, thinking that the world has no purpose other than simply to serve the dictation of their senses, they're trying in so many different ways to serve their senses, which are never actually satisfied. Therefore, in present society, they're perceiving so many different problems, and they're trying so many different ways to solve the problems. But as Prabhupada says, they're just creating more problems. In order to drive your car, then they have to dig into the earth. They have to extract so much oil. They have to refine the oil. They have to transport the oil. They have to create the cars and the highways. They have to create the repair places for the cars. So much endeavor. And the result is they have to send huge armies to the Middle East in order to fight for the oil. So many people get killed. The price of oil is always going up and gasoline. And what is it for? Just so we can drive our car from A to B. Previously, people used to walk, however primitive it seems. People actually knew how to walk. And believe it or not, people did not die just by walking. Now, to have your automobile, so much problems, so many difficulties, So much fear, anxiety, someone's going to steal my auto, someone's going to mark my auto, there won't be any gasoline in my oil, my car. We become more identified with our car than we do with our body. So as I explained before, this is called in Sanskrit, ahamkar. That I am the car. So the purpose of life is not to become identified with the car and serve the car. Either the car we have, which is so much endeavor, people are fighting huge wars to protect our poor car. But it is that to get out of this identification with the vehicle and realize who we actually are and where to go, what our actual destination is supposed to be and how to get there. So this is Bhagavad Gita. It's explaining to us scientific knowledge about the self, the soul. Of course, in this age, although people may not be very philosophical, still this much they should be able to understand. Sometimes, when I'm distributing books, I ask people, what's the difference between a living body and a dead body? And 99% of the people don't know what the difference is between a living and a dead body. Yes, that's what most people say. A living body is alive and a dead body is dead. And then if I ask them, can you explain that a little bit further? They become very bewildered. And then I explain to them that if you have a car and there is a driver in the car, then the car drives along. And if there's no driver in the car, unless it's on the top of the hill and someone pushes it, then it doesn't go anywhere. So similarly, as long as we're in the body, that the body works. And as soon as we leave the body, then the body doesn't work anymore. Therefore, we're the passenger, at least, within the car, and we're different from the car. How to realize that is explained here, that we have to hear from Krishna or from his representatives, and then we have to practice using the car in such a way as to experience a higher state of consciousness. In present society, there's psychology, but generally psychology is trying to convince people that you are the lowest form of life. The only difference between you and the lower forms of life is that the lower form of life is more natural and we become unnatural. So if we work hard in this human form of life, they're trying to encourage us to enter into the lower forms of life. I was a psychology student at a university in America, and at that time the popular form of psychology was called behavior modification, B.S. Skinner. A very unsaintly person. His idea was, when we become educated and evolved enough, if there is a God, we'll find him and then we'll kill him. And then all our problems will be solved. So that was our acharya. So his idea, he just took from someone called who did the experiment. He rang the bell. No. Who? Pablo, yes, Mr. Pablo. He rang the bell and he gave some food to a dog. Because if he probably nowadays they just do it on a computer because they wouldn't want to give food to anyone. So he rang the bell and he gave food to the dog, and the dog, of course, before he ate the food, was salivating. And he did this enough times, and then one time he rang the bell, didn't give the food, but the dog, being conditioned, gave a response by producing saliva. So their idea is that everything is on the basis of a stimuli, and then with the proper stimuli, there'll always be a certain response. And as the animals respond in a certain way to stimuli, so human beings also respond to certain stimuli, not very much different from the animals. And he thought, he could explain all phenomena on the basis of stimuli and response. Now, in present society, they are actually training people systematically by education and propaganda to fulfill this dream that everything is simply a stimuli and a response, because that's all the knowledge they get. But in fact, if there's a stimuli, there's a possibility of using our intelligence to figure out what the response is. But if we're not given any intelligence, what the possibilities of response are, then that's all we are. We're simply bigger dogs in Pablo's experiment. In other words, if we actually have the choice of not responding to the stimuli, that's human form of life. Not that there's a stimuli and then automatically I give the response. In another verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Indriyani mano buddhir asta dishtanam uchite etera vimoha yatyeta gyanama vritti dehina. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence, there's the sitting places of lust which veil the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilder him. In other words, the response that we give in the material world is not always on the basis of higher consciousness, because our intelligence is not pure. Just like I gave the example that if a man is walking down the street and he sees a beautiful woman, then naturally his mind in conditioned life says, go for her. But if he has any intelligence, then his intelligence says, wait a second, that's not dharma, that's not proper, because she's married, she has a little dot on her head, you have to become more careful. But the mind will say, forget it, that's old fashioned, no one believes in that anymore. That went out in the 60s. That the real philosophy is that if you feel like doing something, then go do it. And the soul within the body, listening to debate between the mind and the intelligence, may decide, yes, the mind's giving very good reasons, why should I bother listening to this old-fashioned intelligence? The intelligence, instead of putting up so many complaints, should think of about a plan how to meet her. So then the soul, by his determination, decides to use his intelligence to try to figure out how to meet her. So the soul desires that the intelligence, or determines that the intelligence, to think of a plan. So the intelligence says, yes, write her a letter. Tell her that you'll give her the sun and the moon and the star, and if she's nice to you, you'll throw in a few stars also. And that she's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen, and that you're completely in love with her, and that you should meet her, she should meet you, at such and such place at such and such time. And then the intelligence says, but don't sign the letter, because her husband is twice as big as you are. So in this way, the intelligence, which is, when it's under the superior intelligence coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the dharmic intelligence uses its intelligence to control the mind and senses in such a way as to elevate the soul out of the bodily concept of life. But when the intelligence is not under control of superior power, the superior intelligence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it's simply being utilized to serve the mind and senses. And the result is that by acting according to the dictation of the mind and senses without superior intelligence means that the soul becomes more and more identified with the body. And gradually, Krishna says, its modes of nature change to lower and lower. Instead of elevating itself from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion to the mode of goodness, the living entity acting unrestrictedly according to the dictation of the senses, simply goes down and down and down. So modern society, instead of elevating itself to the platform of goodness, where it controls the mind and senses and realizes gradually who we are and what our purpose of life is, has simply become more and more bewildered by the external energy. So nowadays, things formerly which were considered to be unusual, depraved, whatever else, they become completely normal. Previously, if there was divorce, for instance, then it was quite extraordinary. But now, due to the advance in modern society, if someone's married to the same person, that's considered to be quite extraordinary. People are wondering, what's wrong with you people? You're still married to the same person? And this is your only first marriage? And if children have the same parents, have their natural parents, that's considered to be quite extraordinary. I don't know about here in Australia, but in America, I remember doing the airports, and I'd meet many ladies, and I'd ask them with the children, and say, well, what does your husband do? And she said, well, we don't have a husband. So this is not considered to be unusual. What to speak of nowadays, people taking drugs, taking intoxication or gambling. The whole society, previously there was debates about gambling, but now there's no more debate, practically speaking, whether there should be gambling houses. In America, they have the lottery. I'm sure they have the lottery here too. You can walk outside and gamble. You can go on the internet and gamble. Everything's available. Every type of sinful activity is available, and the only attempt in modern society, practically speaking, is to make it more available so that you can sit at home and you can, without doing anything, commit every sinful activity that's imaginable. Their only lamentation is not that they're acting sinfully, is that there's not an opportunity to do it faster. If you had to walk to hell, they think it would take a long time. So now they're providing jet planes to everyone to fly to hell. And of course, they're only giving one-way tickets. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement is meant to inform people that they have an alternative. They can utilize their mind and senses in a productive way. And by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By reading this literature, such as Bhagavad Gita, we can discover that we're spiritual beings, that we're going to live forever. We can live forever in this material world and suffer different species of life, either more elevated than the present species of life that we're in, or more degraded than the present species of life that we're in. We can stay here forever. But in any case, we're going to live forever. But we have the opportunity to live forever in full knowledge, full consciousness of Krishna, and full happiness. That's up to us. In the human form of life, we can read Bhagavad Gita, we can read Srimad Bhagavatam, we can worship the deities, we can chant Hare Krishna, we can learn to associate with each other in a spiritual way. We can spiritualize the atmosphere. We have that choice if we want to do it. Or we can read B.F. Skinner's books, become convinced that, yes, I'm just a bigger rat. I'm the biggest rat. And we can follow his advice and squeak more and eat more cheese and become a rat in our next lifetime. So that's our choice. We can make that choice. And Bhagavad Gita is giving us that choice. I don't think if we read the daily newspaper, that choice will become so clear. Therefore, the advice is that we should read daily or regularly Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, associate with the devotees, try to understand this philosophy to the best we can, apply it within our existence, and see the happy result that instead of becoming more bewildered, trying to more or less run faster in the rat race, we can actually run in Krishna's race back to the spiritual kingdom. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you are talking about a person who has a vision to see them. That he has a vision to see them. That's the sloka that we read. A person who has a vision to see that he is reborn.
That the foolish cannot understand how a living entity quits his body, or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly.
Right. So, what I'm asking is, only theoretically they can see, or what does that mean? Like, when they can see, what does that seeing mean?
Well, first of all, we see theoretically. Just like, we may not fully realize that we're not the body, but theoretically we can see that my body is changing. But we can see that I within the body, or conscious of the body, I'm always the same. So that's not complete seeing. It's partially theory, and partially, because I've heard it, there's some realization there. But then, there may be certain activities that I can do, such as chanting Hare Krishna, or remaining clean and truthful, controlling my mind and senses, which will bring me to a higher plane of consciousness, and therefore the vision becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. And then finally it's completely realized or experienced. So a little experience is there in the beginning, and as I follow the process, the experience increases. So theory and experience go along. Without the theory, then we won't know what the practice is. And without the practice, we won't get the full experience. Or as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, activities performed in knowledge strengthen one's advancement in real knowledge.
So when you say realize, like without quitting the body, how can you understand about quitting the body?
Without what?
So you're saying as we progress,
yeah,
when we realize that we quit bodies and we take bodies,
we're already quitting so many bodies. What happened to your baby body? You already quit it. I'm not voluntarily, I'm sure you liked it, but it left you. We're quitting so many bodies. Anything else? Yes?
This is grand speaking, not like natural.
Because we're being miseducated, misdirected. That a child may naturally will not like to eat, for instance, meat. But it's being forced to do it by miseducation, mistraining. So our modern leaders, whether it be the educators or the parents, because they themselves are blind, therefore they mislead their dependents. And after a while, by being misled, by being trained up in the wrong way, then it seems natural. But Prabhupada says that if you light a match in a dark room, then the darkness can't put the match out. So in spite of our miseducation, misdirection, if somehow or another someone is fortunate enough to come in contact with the Hare Krishna movement by chanting Hare Krishna or taking prasadam or hearing some of the philosophy, then some light may be, some illumination may be there, and some of the conditioning that we have, the misdirection, will be seen for what it really is. And then one will see a new direction in life. After all, it's not really so hard to see. Although Prabhupada, when he was talking to Professor Katowski in Moscow, it was very hard for him to explain or to understand. Prabhupada, although he explained it very nicely, that we're not the body, even a big professor at the university found it very difficult to understand that he was not his body. Although a small child who was not so trained up could understand it much more easily. think we're going to stop there. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.